Kia ora and welcome to Nerman's Podcast, episode 280. Today is Tuesday, May 29, 2012. As it happens, on Monday and Tuesday of last week, I wanted to record an episode, but I thought I wanted to wait until I found out how a story ended. It's not the first time that I've done that. However, in this case, it turned out that those were the only 2 days I was able to record last week, and so obviously I didn't. Oh well, it happens. So I'm going to conclude that story today, or tell you that story with its conclusion today. But first, something that I thought of just because it happened just as I was sitting down to record. I went to turn off the TV, and I had question time for the New Zealand Parliament with Sky News. But because what I do is I watch the CBS Evening News, and then on certain days, question time follows immediately after, so I leave it on. And sometimes it's entertaining, sometimes it's funny, a lot of times it's just boring, and a lot of times it's really silly. And I've said before about how some of the questions, particularly government MPs asking questions, are really inane and stupid. But sometimes it can be very entertaining, and sometimes you get real histrionics. And you can also see how the New Zealand Prime Minister, John Key, is in real life. It's the Prime Minister that most New Zealanders don't know exists because they've never watched Question Time. But if you want to have a little extra... Oh, and you can watch that on the web. It's streamed live over the internet, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But if you want to have a little extra bit of entertainment value with that, you can follow the Twitter hashtag NZQT, which stands for New Zealand Question Time, oddly enough. And, I mean, a lot of the stuff that people say is they're making jokes or being snarky. Some of it they're trying to score political points. Other times they're actually making rather insightful observations about what the various ministers are saying, or MPs. So it is a way that you can, first of all, see the New Zealand government in action, the New Zealand Parliament, to see what it does and how it operates. And then you can also follow along with Kiwis who are watching it in real time to see what they think about it all. So just a little bit of added entertainment value. Now, that the question time is Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays of weeks in which Parliament is sitting, and it doesn't sit every week, obviously. And at 2 to 3 p.m. is 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time in North America, or 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific in North America, this time of year. Other times of year, it's different. But it's definitely worth checking out if you're at all interested in the way New Zealand government and politics works. Now, onto the story, which is now concluded. You may recall in the last episode, I said that I had no idea what was going on with this realtor who had rung up about somebody who wanted to put in an offer and didn't hear. That was on Thursday and on Friday. Well, on Saturday, I got a text saying that this other agent, the one whose client it actually was, they were putting together an offer and they would have it ready on the following day, Sunday. So, okay, fine. So then Sunday, finally, I get a text around lunchtime-ish saying that it had been dropped off at the office and she was on her way back to get it. And she needed a few minutes, and then, I think once she got there, she texted and said she needed a few minutes and she'd be along. So meanwhile, we had some family staying with us. So they actually sat out on the deck when this agent finally showed up, and it was a bit cold, so that was very generous of them to do that, so we could have a more private meeting. Now, the offer was considerably below what we were willing to take, and even, obviously, much more below what we were asking. And so there's no way that was going to buy the place, but we were going back and forth. Well, should we countersign? What should we do? So on her advice, we countersigned it really what we wanted and sent it back. This was on Sunday, and she said, well, hopefully I'll be able to get back to you later today. Nothing. Monday came and went. Tuesday came and went. Wednesday came, and by around midday, we still hadn't heard a word, so I texted her and saying, well, what's going on? And she said, oh, sorry, that was their top offer. And I'm thinking, what, you couldn't pick up the phone? You couldn't even text me to tell me that it was dead and over? So I was not amused. Now, as it happens, on Tuesday, the listing of our house, the exclusive sale agreement, expired. And there is something in the contract, which I actually hadn't noticed, that a line, basically, that says that when the listing expired, that a general agency would continue under the provisions of the general agency clause. Now, we didn't sign the general agency clause, so I don't really understand if it's binding or not. But what it said basically is, what it amounts to is that if somebody, if we listed with somebody else or sold privately or whatever, and the person who came forward to express interest had originally been introduced by them, we would owe commission to the realtor who just had our listing. And that would continue for 7 days from the date of that they're informed in writing that it was canceled. Now, the listing agreement obviously doesn't require to be any cancellation because has a set expiry date. So that date is actually on Friday of this week, June 1st, 7 full days later, and the general agency is over. Now, you might be thinking, well, what difference does that really make because you're not selling? Or are we? We got a call from another agent, somebody who had shown us a house last year, a year before, I think was the first one she showed us. And she said it would be perfect for us. It had what we call a granny flat, which is like a little self-contained apartment that Nigel's mom could live in, or we could use it as a rumpus room with extra guest rooms or whatever. And it's on the waterfront, but it's up a steep hill from the waterfront. It has its own jetty and a little boathouse, and it also has a mooring out in deeper water. Not that that makes any difference because we don't have a boat. But it's in a nice area. It's got lovely views up over the upper harbor and all that sort of stuff. And so then we started thinking, well, is that something we should pursue? And quite frankly, we haven't ruled it out completely, but we're 99% of the way there, I think. But in order to put in an offer, we'd have to put this place on the market. And then that gets back to the problem that we've had with the house and the leaking situation. And as you may recall, when we had the plaster cut so it was not sitting on the concrete anymore, then we started having water visibly entering the garage where it hadn't before. Well, long story, I contacted a contractor who actually builds these houses, and he talked to a plasterer that he normally uses who is going to come around later this week to try to figure out a solution. And from talking with him on the phone, he sounded like he was actually quite intrigued about trying to work this out and come up with a solution that'll finally fix it. So that's good. And he's also familiar with the construction style of this house. I'm feeling much more confident about that than I have been in the past. And we also, I'm also having a guy give me a price for putting metal caps on those infamous parapets. So that'll prevent them from ever leaking again. And but that's more of a long-term-ish kind of thing. We probably wouldn't do that right away. Some of it would depend on, you know, whether we decide to go on the market, pretty much. Now, my feeling is that I would rather not do anything until spring, partly because this house doesn't present well in the winter, but also because I need a rest. This has been a very trying experience, as you know. But I don't know what we're going to do. I mean, now we're even looking at empty sections to see about maybe buying some land and building ourselves. Not literally ourselves. I mean, having a house built. God knows we wouldn't try to take that on. So I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do. Everything is up in the air now. No idea what's going on except that we have to get this house sorted before we do anything else. And more about that is going to be happening later this week. So that's a good thing. And that's the story that I didn't know the end of until Wednesday afternoon of last week. And as I said, I just didn't have time to record in the rest of that week. Now, coming up this week, Nigel's off on Friday, so I certainly won't be recording another episode on Friday. I might have a chance to do one on Thursday. I don't know at this stage. I don't know how my schedule is going to go. So we'll see. And then the week after, of course, is my big monthly work project, so I doubt I'll have any time, particularly because Monday is Queen's birthday holiday, a public holiday. And, of course, Nigel's off for that as well. So that's why he took Friday off, so he'd have a nice long weekend. Now, as it happens, Friday is also the first day of winter. So we've got the first day of winter on Friday, and Monday is the last public holiday until October. That is bound to make my mood brighter. As you know, I hate winter, and actually public holidays don't matter that much because Nigel can take off time whenever he wants, but to give us longer weekends. But it's just, there's something nice about having a set public holiday because it means we're more likely to get together with family. It's a more relaxed time, all of that sort of stuff. So I don't know. I personally would prefer to have another holiday between now and the end of October, but they didn't ask me, did they? Now, there are a couple of other things I wanted to update. I don't have a link for this, I'm sorry, but in Christchurch, this just sort of caught my eye. In Christchurch, there is an organization set up that is raising money to help repair heritage buildings. And I really should get the URL for that, but I don't even know what it's called. But I just think the idea is interesting, which is why I'm sharing it. And for instance, there's some old church somewhere, not the cathedral, some other old church, which is salvageable, but they need money to do it. And they have raised $15,000 towards the roof from some Christchurch law firm, gave them that donation or whatever, I don't know. But I thought it was a really good idea to kind of centralize a clearing place where people can contribute money to restoring a specific building. And I really like that idea. So I just thought I like it as a concept. So if I do find out more about that, and who knows, I may be able to find out more about that, I'll share that down the road. But I just thought that was interesting, an interesting idea. Last time I was talking about a Twitter war and so on over marriage equality here in New Zealand. And there have been some developments of a sort here in New Zealand over the past couple of weeks. Both the two major parties, Labour and National, have branches that are preceded by the word young. There's young Nationals and young Labour. And it's I think I've mentioned them before, that the cutoff, I think, is 25 or something like that. And they're sort of like the youth auxiliary, not even, I was going to say youth auxiliary of the party, but that's not even true necessarily, because some of them go on to run for parliament while they're still in their, or public office anyway, while they're still in the young branch of the party. They're actually an official branch, not an auxiliary. Well, in Labour anyway, I don't know what the story is with National. I don't really care. Anyway, both of them are arguably more progressive than the parent party in both cases. Young Labour, for instance, passed a resolution backing adoption reform and marriage equality. And although the party had already been on record as supporting adoption reform, they hadn't so much with the marriage equality, and I'm not convinced they are yet, as I discussed last time. Now, this time, this past week or weekend, it's recently anyway, I've forgotten when it was exactly, the Young Nationals met, and they voted to back adoption law reform. Now, what they're actually talking about is not just, you know, shoehorning in same-sex couples into the existing Adoption Act, but completely rewriting it, because it comes from 1955. And at that time, the only legal union between two adults was marriage. De facto didn't exist, and certainly civil unions didn't exist yet. Civil unions were 50 years away. So the idea is to change the law in order to include these other relationships. And one of the issues, well, there's a couple of things going on. The way the current law is now, only married couples can legally adopt. Those who are in de facto relationships or civil unions cannot, but single people, whether they're gay or straight, can adopt children. But the only couples who can are those who are married, and that is only heterosexual couples. As a matter of fact, heterosexual couples who are in a civil union or in a de facto relationship also can't adopt. So this is just silly. It hasn't kept up with the times. But one of the things is I've noticed that the radical right, who are predictably against it, keep going on and on and on about mom and dad are best for a child and blah, 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 you know, like they always do, the same argument that actually they use against marriage equality. It must be their all-purpose defense. I don't know. Anyway, they keep talking about how the interest of the welfare of the child should be the first concern, which everybody agrees with. That's never been an issue. The problem, though, is that what the radical right focuses on is not really what the issue is, especially for same-sex couples. The issue with same-sex couples isn't about what is sometimes called stranger adoption, where you adopt a child you're not in any way related to. But the issue more is when a same-sex couple is raising a child together and only one of them is the legal parent. If something happens to that parent, the other one has no legal rights whatsoever, not for custody, not for even medical decisions, nothing. And this can be a real concern, say, if the other parent is in a car accident or something, and the other parent, theoretically, might be blocked from making any decisions about the child, and if the legal parent can't look after the child for some reason, say they're incapacitated, they could theoretically be taken away. Now, It's not terribly likely because New Zealand is a more enlightened country than that, and they generally don't do that unless they have, unless there's an issue, some other issue. And actually, to be honest, they don't act often enough, even when there are issues. But that's a whole different topic. So when you're talking about adoption law reform as it relates to same-sex couples, you're not talking about, say, two gay men or two lesbian women who are looking to adopt some child to raise a child. It's not like that at all. Well, I mean, there are some like that. Let me rephrase that. But the main issue for same-sex couples is completely different than it would be theoretically anyway for a heterosexual couple. It's about partners raising a child together that is their child legally together, and issues like that. And also, in some cases, I'm trying to use nice words. I was going to say created, but that sounds like a lab rat thing. When they've had a child, say a gay male couple and a lesbian couple have had a child together, and only one of each side is a legal parent, and the other one is completely left out of it. You know, well, that sort of gets, I suppose, to the issues when only one partner in a couple is a legal parent for whatever reason. Not just that, also, say as a product of a divorce or widow or widowerhood or whatever. But that's the main issue for same-sex couples in adoption reform. Now, John Key, in echoing pretty much what he said about marriage equality, said that, he says, "I'm not bothered if there's gay adoption," he told reporters. "I think it's more about whether a child is loved than the sexuality of the parents." Well, that's what most sentient people would say. But he goes, that his government has more important issues to deal with. And he says that if the member's bill is drawn, I will vote for it to go to select committee, and there will be a conscience vote, he said. But the government is not going to put any work, not going to put it on its work program. In truth, it's not a big enough issue. Which is almost exactly what he said about marriage equality. It doesn't concern him personally, so it's not a big issue. And, you know, neither one of these needs to be a huge issue, and most people can do more than one thing at a time. The fact that John Key's government can't might be a bit of a worry in itself, but he only promises to support these things in their first reading so that it gets to the select committee stage, and after that, all bets are off. And my personal bet is that he would vote against adoption reform if it includes same-sex couples, and he would also vote against marriage equality. But that's my personal feeling. I don't know that for certain. But both of those have just come up this week. Now, of course, there are implications in that because, oh, and I should note that the Greens support both adoption reform and marriage equality. And as far as adoption reform goes, there's a members bill that's being drafted by the Green Party's Kevin Haig, who is openly gay, and a national MP of all things named Nikki Kaye, who is the MP for Auckland Central. Now, Auckland Central is obviously an urban electorate, and it's also traditionally a Labour seat, although she's held it now, this is her second term. And with John Key hanging her out to dry on the issue of adoption reform, which is popular in that electorate, it makes the odds of her holding that seat in the 2014 elections much longer. It's going to be much more difficult for her to convince voters in Auckland Central that they should vote for her when the government that she's part of keeps shooting down all the things that she and the electorate claim that they that she claims that she supports and the electorate definitely wants. So it doesn't bode well for Nikki Kaye's future, but we'll see. Anyway, that was actually a bit more of New Zealand politics than I was planning on today. It's a funny time of year, this time of year, because obviously the seasons are changing. People are starting to get a bit more, I don't know, hibernating or whatever. There's not as much outdoor stuff going on. But when the budget was released last week, there were protests in the street. And Bill English, who's the finance minister and deputy prime minister, mocked the students, mostly university students, who were hosting these protests. And he said that the Greeks could teach them how to do a protest, basically. And he said, nobody listens to them. Nobody cares what they have to say. And I'm thinking, that's not the right attitude to take to these people. The students have legitimate gripes with this government. And the government keeps referring to tertiary education as a private benefit. But they expect, because theoretically, if you get a more advanced degree, then you can go off to get a better job. That's theoretically true, except that the job growth has been stagnant in New Zealand for years, and unemployment rate remains stubbornly high. And so what these people do is they get their degrees and they go off to Australia. We have record numbers of people heading to Australia because of the policies of this government. And so, you know, you got to think that maybe the students might have a point. Maybe they should listen to them a little bit more. The government is also, we have this thing that's called a student benefit, or student allowance, I think it's actually called, to help supplement students as they're working on their bachelor's degree. Well, the government is cutting back the eligibility on that to, I think it's maximum 4 years or something. And typically our university education is not 4 years, by the way. But it's not going to be available for postgraduate degrees anymore. And the government claims that it wants to have more scientists and engineers in New Zealand, and yet it's taking away the funding that would help students get the advanced qualifications in those very fields. So, you know, it's just weird. And then they're also increasing class size in schools, particularly what actually kicks in before kids have even learned to read. So you're going to have these teachers who have more students. It's going to be harder for them to work, to do their work. And it's going to be, they often have special needs students in their class as well. So, I mean, it's just going to mean that there's going to be degradation of public education until Labor gets back in and changes things, fixes things as they always do. But, you know, this is the way it goes. National gets in, they slash and burn, and they create all kinds of problems and divisions and problems for New Zealand, and Labor gets in and they fix everything. That's the way it works. But now, let's do this.
Anybody got a match?
Yes, it's time to light the birthday candles. There are two birthdays that I want to mention or point out or whatever. The first is Peter, a.k.a. Apollonius, or as Big Fatty likes to call him, Peter Potamus. His birthday, I think, was Monday, if I remember correctly. I don't know. I get confused because of the time zones. And also, happy birthday to Paul of Paul's Podcast, who has always been one of my inspirations, one of the reasons why I started podcasting in the first place, those many years ago. Happy birthday to both of you. And I would mention birthdays more often, but I usually forget, because I forget everything. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't remember those two if my calendar hadn't popped up and said, "Ooh, they have birthdays." Well, not quite like that. It had a nicer voice than that. But now let's move on to voicemail messages.
Hello, Arthur. It's the Fay Driver. I just wanted to give you a little note. I have the same problem with Scotty the Little Aussie Battler and his voice files. And what I do is import them into iTunes, and then I do create AAC version. So under the advanced menu option, you should be able to find create AAC version. It will do something to the file, magical, and then you will be able to use it in GarageBand. It'll import right in and work quite nicely. That's my little tip. It's no wonder we gave those bloody Aussies their own bloody island, because they can't do anything right. Anyway, enjoy your week. I am the Fay Driver. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you for that, Fay Driver. And Fay Driver will be at Pride 48 in Las Vegas this year, apparently doing his magic shuttle, his magic bus. Anyway, that's basically what I do as well. I take the WAV files, and I open them in iTunes, and then I re-export them from iTunes as a WAV file. And the reason I want a WAV file is either WAV or AIFF will run through Levelator to take out the peaks and troughs in voicemail messages, which is particularly important when somebody is talking on a phone, especially in noisy conditions like traffic noise or wind or what have you. And so that's why I do it that way. It's really weird that comes in as a WAV file, and yet I can't place it directly into GarageBand, whereas I can any other WAV file. It's just very strange. But thanks for that, Fay Driver, and do check out his podcast. I don't know the link off the top of my head, but I'll put it in the show notes. I don't know anybody's link off the top of my head. I barely know my own. And now on to the next message.
Hey, Arthur, this is Scott, a.k.a. Sater69. Really? I've just listened to the latest podcast, and do you really want to put yourself to that much work? Has anyone ever... I'm talking about your podcast idea, how you want to take the expat stuff into its own separate podcast. Are people complaining that they have to listen to about your life to hear about the expat stuff? Or do they have to suffer through the expat stuff to hear about your life? Does it matter that much? You know, because when I listen to your podcast, I listen to you as a whole. And that's with a W. little big fatty there. But I listen to everything about you, because every aspect of what your podcast about intrigues me and interests me. I'm never going to be an expat. But your experiences are very interesting to listen to. And honestly, your personal life stuff, I could give a flying fuck about, but... Oh, can I say fuck? I'm sorry. But I like everything about you. No, I'm not personally... Oh, God, I can't think of the word. Vetted into you, your life, but I love listening to you. I love hearing about your life. I think you're doing yourself a disservice by making yet another podcast that you don't have time for. Self-admittedly, that you don't have time for all that. Just be yourself. And if people don't like it, then they can take a flying... I don't know if I can say fuck. That's just my opinion. Take it for what it's worth. All right, this is a Sater. Catch you later.
Well, thanks for that, Scott. And I should probably clarify that that when I'm talking about a separate podcast, I'm not literally talking about a second podcast, one that is completely on its own and so on. What it really would be is that I would publish the expat-related question, and I don't just mean expat in general necessarily, more like interviews and so on, as a separate feed so that it's easier to market, because... there are a lot of people out there in this world who are interested specifically in expat stuff, or moving to New Zealand for that matter, but who are interested specifically in expat stuff, who may not care about anything else that I talk about. In fact, they may even be hostile to some of the other stuff I talk about, but they still could get value out of the expat stuff. And also, some of these expats may have unique perspectives that would be useful to them. However, because I am an expat, I would also include that in this podcast as if nothing has changed. The only difference between the two probably would be opening and closing. That would probably be the only difference. So when I say an extra, another podcast, it's actually not exactly true. It's basically just repackaging it for other consumption. If that makes more sense, I don't know. But I do appreciate the kind words, Scott, and I agree with you. I mean, I listen to all sorts of different podcasts, as does Scott and plenty of other people. And I don't necessarily like every single thing that every single podcast does, but that's kind of not the point. Especially if you listen to a podcast over time, you develop a connection with the person and their life and what they're talking about, and you take it as a whole with a W, thank you very much, and not just one single thing. And I thought that was a particularly good point. So thank you for that, Scott. And also thank you for extending my phone line for another 30 days. That's always a plus. Well, for me anyway, it's a plus, because I don't have to make an international long distance call to do it. But speaking of the general subject of expats, I wanted to mention, one of the handful of original gay podcasters is a guy by the name of John Ong, who was born in Malaysia and came to the United States in 1995. And he recently became a U.S. citizen. And he's talked about this on his podcast. And I found it fascinating because he talked about the exam he had to go through in order to pass the citizenship test, which is something New Zealand doesn't have. We don't have a citizenship test. You don't have to prove you know anything about New Zealand or the government or anything. I've always argued that people should study history anyway, just because it makes you fit in better. And I actually think an argument can be made or why some sort of civics test is a good idea for people who want to be citizens. Not for people who want to live long term in a country necessarily, but certainly if you want to make the commitment to become a citizen, it seems to me you kind of ought to know something about the country that you're about to become a citizen of. Having said that, however, I know that in the U.S. there are all these studies that have shown that the majority of people can't pass, the majority of people born in the United States can't pass the citizenship test. So, or at least a huge numbers of them anyway. I shouldn't say majority because I don't know that for certain and I don't feel like looking it up. Somebody probably can tell me what the real story is on that. But the point is that it's something that native-born Americans don't necessarily, can't necessarily pass. So he recently went through that, and then he also has since gone through the citizenship ceremony and so on. And he talks about that on his podcast, which is online, O-N-G-L-I-N-E, which I think is a brilliant name. And I actually hope to have him as a guest, oddly enough, fairly soon, so that I could talk with him about his experiences and what he was thinking and so on. But in the meantime, you can listen to his perspective on that at his podcast, online.com, and I'll put a link in the show notes. His most recent episodes are about that. Maybe I'll trying to think if I'm going to do a general link or the specific issue. I'll sort that out when I do the show notes. You'll just have to look and see. But it's well worth checking out. It's an interesting story. And of course, I, for one, would like to welcome him as a citizen of the United States and as a as an expat who has done the same thing down in this part of the world. I can really closely identify with a lot of the things he was going through, apart from that whole citizenship exam, because as I said, I didn't have one. But that's what I wanted to talk about today. Now, do remember that Pride 48 is coming up live from Las Vegas in September. If you'd like to go, there are codes that you can use to get discount reservations at the Luxor and the Excalibur. And I don't know the registration codes off the top of my head, but what I'll do is I'll again link to the Pride 48 blog post where those codes are embedded, and also other details about that whole thing, the dates and how we'd like you to tell us that we're going, so that you're going, so that we know how many people are going to be there. And if you are a podcaster and you are planning on taking part in Pride 48 this year, whether in Las Vegas or anywhere else in the world, or if you've never participated and you'd like to, then contact me. And for that particular one, I have a special email address just for that, which is Arthur, A-R-T-H-U-R, at pride48.com. And I'm collecting a list just of people who want to participate at the stage. We're not worried about when or how long or anything like that. At this point, we're just trying to get an idea of who is planning on participating in the event from wherever in the world you will be during that weekend in September. But that is it for today. I may be back this week. If not, it'll probably be the end of next week before I'll have another opportunity, because I'll be working next week. But we'll see how it goes. Anyway, talk to you soon. Bye.
You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Airman's Podcast at airmanspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at airmanspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.